You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
First off, let me just give you a bit of forewarning that today's passage from Luke is one of those passages that people sometimes complain about hearing so near to Christmas. In general, these people want to hear sweet, feel-good passages about a baby and mangers and well-behaved livestock. Instead, the lectionary gives us all sorts of apocalyptic readings about doom, destruction, and the end of the world, the idea being that these dark, foreboding Advent passages make the big reveal of Christmas all the more dramatic and welcome. So, don't be surprised by John the Baptist's unhinged rant in today's passage. And for those of you who like to stay grounded in the knowledge of where our texts come from, you might be interested to know that this passage is pretty special. If you look over in Matthew 3, you're going to find almost identical wording to our Luke passage. But where that normally means Luke and Matthew have plagiarized the material together from Mark, this story is nowhere to be found in Mark. So that means, boys and girls, that Luke and Matthew lifted today's passage from that mysterious gospel we call Q, or the source. Matthew and Luke borrowed from Q, just like they did from Mark. But we don't actually have a copy of Q anymore. We don't know what the original Q said exactly, but we can clearly see Luke's fingerprints all over this version. Namely, Luke's added questions that focus more on the contemporary issues of his day, conflict with the occupying imperial forces, corrupt tax collectors, and just the selfish, fearful mindset of the people in general. As usual, Luke is being super inclusive here, but as an equal opportunity offender, he puts everyone at the same level, but in a negative light. Starting with a real shocker, there's no privilege in being religious, not even in being one of the descendants of Abraham. He essentially says that, in the end, it's about the way we treat one another. Duh. Repentance is not just remorse or regret. It means changing our way of being in the world. As one of my professors, Bill Loader, points out, John the Baptist's program was so good that, as we find out later, Jesus picked it up as part of his core message. Namely, it's not what you believe, but the fruit that counts.
Our words of wisdom today are from Luke chapter 3, verses 7 through 15 and verse 18. In fulfillment of those words, crowds streamed out from the villages and towns to be baptized by John at the Jordan.
You bunch of venomous snakes, who told you that you could escape God's coming wrath? Don't just talk of turning to God. You'd better bear the authentic fruit of a changed life. Don't take pride in your religious heritage, saying, "We have Abraham for our father." Listen, God could turn these rocks into children of Abraham. God wants you to bear fruit. If you don't produce good fruit, then you'll be chopped down like a fruitless tree and made into firewood. God's axe is taking aim and ready to swing.
What shall we do to perform works from changed lives?
The person who has two shirts must share with the person who has none, and the person with food must share with the one in need.
Some tax collectors were among those in the crowd seeking baptism.
Teacher, what kind of fruit is God looking for from us?
Stop overcharging people. Only collect what you must turn over to the Romans.
What about us? What should we do to show true change?
Don't extort money from people by throwing around your power or making false accusations, and be content with your pay.
John's bold message seized public attention, and many began wondering if John might himself be the anointed one promised by God. He preached with many other provocative figures of speech, and so conveyed God's message to the people. The time had come to rethink everything. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Okay, once upon a time, Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi are in a Chinese restaurant, and Luke is really having trouble using the chopsticks. Finally, Obi-Wan says, "Use the forks, Luke." All right, how's this one? How is duct tape like the Force? The answer? It has a dark side, a light side, and it binds the galaxy together. In the 2001 census in England and Wales, 390,127 people, that's almost 0.8%, stated their religion as Jedi. And that's no joke. In number, they surpassed Sikhism, Judaism, and Buddhism, making it the fourth largest reported religion in the country that year. A few years ago, a series of mosques were constructed on the campuses of Turkish universities. Then, thousands of Turkish students raised their voices in campaigns to build both Buddhist and Jedi temples at their universities. University students in the western province of Izmir have demanded a Jedi temple be built on their campus because, as their petition says, there are less and less Jedi left on the earth. The nearest temple is billions of light years away. It adds that uneducated Padawan are moving to the dark side. To recruit new Jedi and to bring balance to the Force, we want a Jedi temple. So in both the UK and Turkey, the growth of adherence to the religion of the Jedi is more about freedom of religion than any real religious devotion, but I still remember more than 40 years ago when the fateful words, "a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away," came up on the screen. For many, what followed very nearly seemed like a religious experience. Today, all these years later, one of my favorite moments of each week is sitting down with my kids and watching the new installments of the latest Star Wars phenomena, Jon Favreau's The Mandalorian. And whether it's the movies or one of the animated series or the video games, what we know now is that a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, like once upon a time before it, invites us into a story that transcends time and space. Some of you know that George Lucas was a student of the work of historian and anthropologist Joseph Campbell. You may remember the book and the PBS series, The Power of Myth, where Campbell explained the similarities of the journey of every hero humanity has ever adored, from ancient myth to Jesus to Luke Skywalker. It's the same pattern. A hero ventures forth from the world of the common day into a region of supernatural wonder. Fabulous forces are there encountered, and a decisive victory is won. The hero comes back from this mysterious adventure with the power to bestow benefits on his fellow man. The specifics change. One hero went to see John on the banks of the Jordan before facing down Pilate. The other visited Yoda on Dagobah before the battle with Vader. But the details don't really matter much. What does matter are the themes that unite us all, the primeval story that we share and that is our common human foundation. Lucas was better than most at reimagining this human story. By setting his retelling in a galaxy far, far away, and by following Campbell's guidelines religiously, He created a phenomena that was so powerful, it almost instantly became mythological itself. And of course, at the center of it all is the Force. This is a power defined by Jedi Master Obi-Wan Kenobi as an energy field created by all living things. It surrounds us and penetrates us. It binds the galaxy together. Sound familiar? Some have made comparisons to the spirit we think of, and others reject the notion, mainly because the Force has a light side and a dark side and can be used for good or for evil. And I don't think it takes Joseph Campbell to remind us of the thematic overlap between Advent and the Star Wars sagas. The repeated warning that the greatest evil any of us will ever face is not the evil that attacks us from the outside, but the evil that comes from within us. Bill Ridway says that any one of us, even the best of us, can give in to fear, anger, and hatred if we're not vigilant. Those are powerful emotions that can blur our senses and cause us to lose sight of what true goodness really is. In our passage today, the crowds who gather by the River Jordan find their security in having Abraham as their ancestor. But John reminds them that God can raise up children to Abraham out of the stones of the ground. Goodness doesn't come from being a branch on Abraham's family tree. Big deal. Look at the branch Luke and Leia Skywalker came from. Look what happens to Leia and Han's son. No, goodness comes from deciding to do good. John the Baptist challenges the people to bear good fruit. Don't give in to fear and greed. As Anakin Skywalker, Darth Vader started out okay. But over time, he became so obsessed with his own passions and fears that those emotions ended up taking over and eclipsing what made him truly human. The crowds around John ask a question that is just as important today as it was in the first century or in a galaxy far, far away. What then should we do? John lays it out pretty simply. Whoever has two coats must share with anyone who has none, and whoever has food must do likewise. Tax collectors should collect no more than the proper amount, and soldiers should resist the temptation to extort money from people. Share what you have. Don't cheat, and don't exploit people with your power. Wow, is this church or kindergarten? Keep your empathy alive, recommends John. Behave in ways that are fair, just, and focused not only on caring about needy individuals, but in changing the world so they won't be needy in the first place. How does John end his diatribe? He says we need to rethink everything. Well, what about our traditions? What about the things I grew up believing? What about them? If you stop to think about the exclusivity and implied violence of a lot of our traditions and beliefs, then yeah, they need to be rethought. Believe like me or you're burning in hell. Nice. The rethinking John is calling for is just the opposite of stirring up hatred of others in the name of religion, pulling ourselves away from our primal urges of fear and mistrust, and opting for a response that reflects the best of what it is to be human. From the ignorance and violence of the white supremacists who call themselves Proud Boys to the hatred of whoever it is who keeps tearing down the Fountain's We Believe banner. I keep hearing the words of the Emperor coaxing Luke toward the dark side. The hate is swelling in you now. Give in to your anger. With each passing moment, you make yourself more my servant. Even though the deepest part of our primal selves make us prone to giving in to fear and anger. The force that we claim as followers of Jesus challenges us to overcome those base emotions and channel our lives into concrete actions of justice, care, and compassion. Each of us is challenged to open ourselves to a very human sense. I'll call it the spirit. You Jedis can call it the force that knows in the deepest parts of who we are, that it finally comes down to acknowledging the profound gift of life, not just for ourselves, but in every person. And it goes beyond John's admonition to feed the hungry or share a shirt. It's about joining the resistance, about shining a light on the ways that the world grinds the people down for the sake of the comfort of the few. It's about changing the world. In the trailer to The Force Awakens, Luke says, "The Force is strong in my family. My father has it. I have it. My sister has it. You have that power too." Yeah, it's just a story. It's just a metaphor. But I'll remind you that nearly three quarters of everything that Jesus said was fiction. He told stories to get his point across. And so, to that end, metaphors be with you. When you come right down to it, the Christmas stories are metaphor on top of metaphor on top of metaphor. As Marcus Borg said, "I don't think the truth of the Christmas stories are dependent upon whether Jesus was born in Nazareth or Bethlehem, whether there were wise men, whether there really was a star. I think the truth of the stories is in their ancient archetypal religious symbolism, those affirmations that Jesus is the light in the darkness." And as metaphors go, that's a good one. Jesus is the light of the world, and that light is strong in followers of Jesus. I have it, you have it too. As author Frederick Buechner writes, "From deep within whatever the hidden spring is that life wells up from, there wells up into our lives, even at their darkest and maybe especially then, a power to heal, to breathe new life into us." And in this regard, I think every person is a mystic, because every person at one time or another experiences in the thick of joy or pain, the power out of the depths of life to bless. And as Buechner goes on to say, "I don't believe it matters a lot what you call this power. The Spirit is only one of its names. But what I think does matter is that we open ourselves to receive it, that we address it and let ourselves be addressed by it, that we move in the direction that it seeks to move us, the direction of fuller communion with itself and with one another. Indeed, I believe that for our sakes, the Spirit beneath our spirits has the potential to make Christs of us before we're done." Like Jedi's awakening to the Force, Advent is about followers of Jesus awakening to the Spirit. It's about reminding us that we're part of a movement, not in a galaxy far, far away, but in and of the world right now. A world that needs transforming, of people challenged to not be afraid, but be more caring and compassionate. If you think at all about the original Christmas stories in the coming days, don't cheat yourself of their true meaning by obsessing about whether they actually happened or not. They didn't. Look instead for the great metaphors of light in the darkness, the evil empire trying to squash the hero, and in the case of our passage today, those like John who prepare the way for change. Find your story inside the Christmas stories, and metaphors be with you. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.